I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon to start your week feeling uplifted and optimistic. Let's tap into the universal energy that connects us all. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Good afternoon. Welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. And you may be listening in Vancouver at 101.9 FM CITR or also online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And wherever you're listening from, thank you so much for joining us on this holiday Monday. Today we have a very special guest, David Sarita. He is a physicist and a filmmaker for over 30 years. David Sarita has studied Christian mysticism, Buddhism, Hinduism, yoga, Judaism, Islam, Sufism, and Pythagoras. His practice and direct experience in meditation started with Hinduism, yoga, and Buddhism, Vipassana, and Osho, and chanting mantras, and Christian meditation and prayer. So he has a ton of experience in meditation. We're going to be talking about his new meditation downloads through Namaste Publishing. He has two available: meditation for deep relaxation and inner body awareness, and then his second is The Breath of God, Discover Your Vastness of Being. So we're going to talk with David about that today. Welcome to the show, David.
Good to be here, Marie. Thank you for having me today.
Thanks for being on. So you are from Vancouver.
I'm from Edmonton, Alberta.
Oh, okay. But you lived in Vancouver, right?
Yeah, I was born in Edmonton in 1961. My four brothers and my parents and I, we all moved to Berkeley, California in 1964. So I grew up in the Berkeley Bay Area during the 60s, and then it wasn't until 1972 that we moved back to Canada, where we lived in Vancouver for quite a while.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just from Vancouver. So good to know that.
I kind of am, I guess. A lot of time there.
And so tell us about, I want to talk about your meditation CDs. So tell us a little bit about the journey that brought you to this Breath of God, Discover Your Vastness of Being.
Well, you know, it's kind of ironic for me to even think of teaching meditation because, you know, there's all these teachers out there and there's all these gurus from India who teach meditation. And there's, you know, it's just kind of a world that's flooded with meditation instruction. And I kind of started to realize that there weren't very many Western people who had been practicing daily for over 30 years. And I thought, you know, why are people like, I hate to say this, Rodney Yee, teaching meditation when he admitted he didn't know anything about meditation, and he's a yoga teacher, you know, he teaches asana. And what happens is in the West, people get packaged because they're famous, and they figure, well, people will learn meditation from these instructors because they're already a personality and they're already packaged. So it's all about marketing. And it kind of made me upset when I started seeing that, because if you learn meditation incorrectly, it will do you a lot of damage, and it won't really lead you anywhere significant. I mean, you might get a little bit of peace of mind and feel a little bit calmer, but really you're not going to go anywhere. And after practicing meditation and studying different techniques and traveling to the Far East and India and also the Middle East, and I realized that there were serious problems in translation from these different languages into Western culture. And there were a lot of practices that people I know who have been on the path as long as I have or longer, and they weren't getting results. I mean, I know many people who did one technique, they stuck with the same guru, and they're really not happy with what's going on. And I thought, wow, I'm really happy, and I'm really getting this. And I'm really consistently now able to go into super deep states of consciousness meditating. And I thought, what are these other guys missing? You know, why are so many of those personalities who are addicted to certain types of highs from, you know, their previous drug days or other codependencies like alcohol? I thought, why did you guys go back to that stuff? And you were meditating for years, so I saw a lot of that too. And then I realized, okay, you had all these, you know, the super famous yoga instructors in California, and I mean, I really, you know, to me, when I kind of pick and tease a little bit, I'm not serious. I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings. But I brought one of these really well-known yoga instructors from L.A., I won't name him, to meditate with this Buddhist monk that I sit with for sometimes 2 or 3 hours at a time. And this guy is so flexible. You can't even imagine him. He's just a rubber mm-hmm. band, and I'm not so flexible. And I can sit solidly for an hour, get up and move my legs, you know, stretch, and then go sit for another hour. And this guy brought a stack of pillows, like, you know, cushions. It was starting to wobble when he was meditating. And he just couldn't sit still. You know, he couldn't sit in meditation. And it's like, oh, my God, he's like six pillows high, and he's sitting cross-legged, and his mind is fidgeting, and he just can't do it. I thought, this guy's the most flexible guy I know. I mean, he can stick his foot behind his head. And only my baby can do that. I can't do that. So what is the problem? And so that's when I started to realize a lot of people who were doing techniques and really getting into techniques were not getting good results. And the bottom line is, if you're meditating and you're not blown away by what's happening to you, then it isn't working. And you should be getting to the point that you're really blown away by the results within 3 years, I would say. You should, if you practice regularly and you can increase your practice to 1 or 2 hours per day and you're not blown away by 3 years, then there's something wrong. And I know a lot of us are really devoted to our teachers and our gurus and our methods, but you really have to be honest with yourself. And that's one of the things I did here, is that, you know, I was hanging out with some of the most well-known gurus out there. You know, many, many different teachers, you know, from Swami Sham, Osho, I spent a lot of time with, Baba Hari Das, most recently the Mother Mira. I've been to India and hung out with Poonjiji for a couple of months and studied with the Dalai Lama, many Buddhist masters, and some Christian mysticism. Mostly I had to learn on my own. So I jumped around a lot because I wanted to find the technique, you know, the best meditation techniques and exercises you could really use that really worked, you know. And then there were a number of Western teachers like Leonard Orr, who started the breath therapy or rebirthing movement. And that's quite a powerful, very, very purging, very opening technique. But what I found with Leonard Orr's technique was that it was too vigorous for most people. Most people would go into spasms and cry. In fact, even one of my best friends in Vancouver, it looked like he went into an epileptic seizure, and his muscles started shaking violently and, you know, spitting up foam around his mouth. So that technique was a little too extreme for most people. You know, I had some difficulty with it because it would bring up a lot of emotion really fast and not necessarily as much as I was willing to deal with right away. Nevertheless, I've done several hundred of the Leonard Orr techniques. But when my wife was doing the Leonard Orr technique, and my wife is a jazz singer, and she's very delicate, she started doing this long, slow breathing, you know, not this vigorous, you know, pumping breathing that you're doing eventually in the Leonard Orr technique. So I decided I'm going to try it, and when I started doing the long, really relaxing on the exhale, nice space, then another, and just continuing like that with the guidance of the insight, making contact with the different areas of the body very methodically, process, I went, oh my God, am I getting high? And I went, really incredible, like, you know, looking over at the swimming pool through the window and going, oh my God, and the wall, a glass of water, it didn't matter what I looked at. I was really getting into this super state of consciousness. And then I made the commitment with the breath of God, you know, exploring your vastness of being. I made the commitment to do it for 30 days in a row. And when I did it for 30 days in a row, I was just so high all the time. I would go outside and open the window and see the stars. And it wasn't like ordinarily going out looking at the cosmos. It felt like the cosmos was the top of my head. I couldn't even feel my body. It was like literally the stars were were the top of my head. I could feel them. I could feel their light, their cosmic vibration, the numerous qualities, you know, in the cosmos coming through my crown chakra. And I was going, and this is, you know, I did the technique in the morning, and this is still, you know, going on all day. I'm noticing how incredibly, you know, cosmic and blissed out I am. So then I made the commitment to do, you know, the meditation every season change. So four times a year, I do it 30 days once per season. And I'm only on season three right now. I'm just literally just finished it last month. And I'm just, each season, it seems to be getting more and more incredible. So I think, you know, if people that I know that have been doing this stuff for over 30 years, and they're not happy, I know so many of them, they're, you know, they have the peace of mind, they're peaceful, they love the structure, the teachings, and reading the Bhagavad Gita, different manuscripts, but they're not really getting the bliss, they're not getting the big stuff. And I just say to them, you know, you guys, if you really, really want to get this, you know, you really got to try, you know, downloading this meditation on the Namaste site, you know, explore, you know, your vastness of being through the breath of God meditation, and just do it for 30 days and tell me what happens. Because every one of my friends who has done it even for 3 days is blown away, even in 3 days. Some of them, you know, artist friend of mine did it just once, and he couldn't believe what happened to him. So that's why I did this. I did it because I just saw what was out there, and I thought, why are people teaching meditation and getting published who have only been doing this for 2 or 3 years? I said, that's not a qualification to be teaching meditation. And furthermore, what kind of a technique are they really teaching, and is it really, really working? And I really want to see people get this. I want to see people get off drugs. You know, all these people out there now doing the newest craze, ayahuasca visions and things like that. I mean, that is an old, lazy person's method to try to get high on the universe and get high on God and your true self and God. The best way to do this is to do the meditation every single day, and you eventually will get so fulfilled on such a deep level, you'll never want to touch hallucinogens or plants ever again.
Awesome. Well, it's time for a break now, so I want to talk about the bliss that you experience through regular meditation after the break. Today we are speaking with David Sarita about his latest meditation CDs available at namastepublishing.com. If you go to the store and then you look under Browse Authors and Speakers, then you'll be able to find David Sarita's page there. And the name of, he has two, it's Meditation for Deep Relaxation and Inner Body Awareness. And then the one that we're talking about right now is The Breath of God, Discover Your Vastness of Being, again at namastepublishing.com. And I think I'm going to give away a free download of that coming up later in the hour. So listen for the cue to call for that. But if you would like to get on the air and ask David a question, so this isn't for the free download, but if you want to ask him a question, the number is 604-822-2487. That's 604-822-2487. We'll be back with more synchronicity in a moment.
Bond. James Bond.
Get to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
You talking to me? You talking to me?
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Plastics.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Just a sweet transvestite. From Transsexual Transylvania.
Where else can you see Hollywood blockbusters, midnight cult classics, indie films, live music, burlesque, stand-up comedy, poetry slams, and live sporting events all at your local theater? The Rio Theater, voted number one in East Vancouver. your neighborhood indie theater that promotes all things cool.
It's the Doxa Film Festival on the 12th and 13th, Friday the 13th at midnight on Friday the 13th, and Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides playing the 20th through the 31st.
For more information, go to riotheater.ca.
Welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks for being with us today. I hope that you are having a fabulous long weekend if you're in Canada. I don't know if it's a long weekend in the States, but it's definitely one here in Canada. So hooray for that. And we are speaking today with David Sarita. He is a physicist, he is a filmmaker, and he has been studying various forms of meditation and spirituality for over 30 years. So he has a wide experience in this field. And if you have a question for him, give us a call, 604-822-2487. Welcome back to the show, David.
Thank you.
So let's talk about the experience, because this is the first time you've been on Synchronicity, and I know that you have had experiences where you have heard the sound of the sun, you have connected with Jesus and so many other ascended masters. So can you tell us a little bit about your experiences, the major like wow experiences that you've had through meditation?
Well, the first really powerful opening in meditation, you know, wasn't hanging out with one of the gurus. My dad, Dr. Lynn Sarita, was leading a weekend Buddhist retreat in Vancouver down at Jericho Beach area. And some of my friends had gone to the retreat, and some of my brother's surfer friends had gone. And one of my friends, because we're sitting cross-legged an hour at a time, getting up, walking for 10 minutes, slow motion Buddhist walking, and then sitting again. It's a very rigorous technique and quite painful on the back and the legs. And one of my friends escaped. He crawled out the window and just left because it was just too painful for him. And he was a martial artist. And sitting still intensely is more difficult. In fact, doing nothing, mastering nothing, is harder than doing everything you could possibly do. And for me, that includes, extreme skiing, you know, mogul skiing, skydiving, tree planting, which is harder than all of them. Sitting still, the pain that you have to go through to learn how to break the spasms in the mind and the body is harder than anything. But once you break it, on the second day, I was sitting there and I was shaking. My legs were shaking violently from spasms. I had so much muscle in my legs from, you know, biking and skiing and tree planting. I couldn't sit with my legs in the nice lotus posture. But I was so intent on breaking down that barrier, I just shook and I was sweating, and all of a sudden there was just this huge explosion of ecstasy that started in my belly. And it was so, so blissful and so clear and bright and so expansive. And, you know, I just couldn't even believe what was happening. The room was silent. There was 30 meditators in there just, you know, sitting, meditating, and I just started laughing hysterically, and I had to excuse myself and go outside. And I couldn't really feel my body very much. The sensation of the body touching the ground was less than 20% of my consciousness. And I was in this super luminous field of perfect, smooth ecstasy. And I could hear the sounds coming from blades of grass, you know, plants. Then I came upon the three weeping willow trees right down there in Jericho Park. And the wind was blowing through them, and I could feel the wind caressing them like it was my own body, that sensitive. But bathed in this supernatural ecstasy and this all this sound coming from all the plants. And then the little birds were walking on the grass, and it tickled me when they walked on the grass because I could feel it that deeply. And then I turned and looked up at the sun, and oh my God, I could hear it. I could hear it making this deep hum in this high-pitched frequency all at the same time. And that's when I realized I was in the cosmic consciousness. I was in, you know, super samadhi. I was one. I wasn't just one with everything. I was feeling it all so much deeper than any of the gurus had described it. You know, they had described bliss states, they had described perfect peace, but I had no idea it was going to be this good. You know, the experience lasted a long time. You know, when I came back, some of the other meditators were walking slow motion around the neighborhood, you know, silently. And I looked at one of my brother's friends who was this surfer. And I looked at him, and it was like a beam of light of ecstasy. I looked at him, and it was coming from his heart. And he just laughed hysterically because he could feel the same thing I was feeling. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and we both just laughed and went, look down. You know, don't look at each other because you're not supposed to look at people when you're, you know, that's one of the rules. Don't make eye contact. But yet every time I looked at him, it was like this super, you know, bliss ball, you know, hitting me in my being. And it really didn't matter what I looked at. I was having this ongoing experience. And I wasn't, you know, at that time, I was very young. I was probably not more than 18 years old, you know, 18 or 19 years old. And it was when I was 18 that I started meditating every single day, you know, never missing a day for, you know, 32 years. And never stopping. Because I realized this is it. This, you know, when I was in high school, I had experimented with, you know, marijuana and alcohol. And, you know, I think I mean, I'm being very candid here. I did cocaine once and did jumping jacks all night and thought, you know, how ridiculous. I don't need this. And the more, and I did mushrooms and I did, you know, what's known as ecstasy. And I just thought, you know, MDMA. That stuff all makes you sick to your stomach. It's the visions on the mushrooms are all, it's all foggy and you got a stomach ache and there's luminosity, but you're sick at the same time. And I thought, who wants that? When you can have this meditation high, oh my God, this is million times better than anything of any of the plant kingdom could possibly give you. So I quit. I changed high schools. I went from Kitsilano High School to Lord Byng, and I never touched a single plant ever again for the rest of my life because I didn't want that. And well, the reason I'm being this candid and open about it is because that's what I hope to inspire. I hope to inspire the people who are addicted to certain types of highs that they get from a certain plant. That, you know, you see these guys on pot walking around and they're saying Jesus smoked pot, and yeah, right, and their eyes are like all swollen and they got dark circles under their eyelids that are all swollen up, and they say, you know, marijuana isn't bad for you, it's totally natural. Are you kidding? Look at you got red eyes, you know, you look like hell, and you're trying to tell me Jesus smoked pot and he wasn't high enough? Are you kidding me? He was blown out of his cosmos in ecstasy and love and peace and things that we can't even imagine. So I kind of battled all those people, and many friends that I had were former, you know, were druggies, and I can't even hang out with you guys anymore. I can't even associate with that type of spirituality anymore because it's just, I'm just not interested in it anymore. You guys can go do that. I'm not judging you. Just, this is it. I found something better now. See you later. I'm off. And I went to a lot of 10-day Buddhist retreats and, you know, started doing asana yoga more regularly than I already was and getting deeper and deeper into this stuff. And it eventually gets so incredible that my first experience is utterly nothing in comparison to what starts to happen. In 1996, in December 22nd and 23rd, I had the most incredible experience of my life. At 4:15 in the afternoon, I started shaking and like I was dying. I felt like I was going to collapse. It was like a nervous system collapse. And I just kind of collapsed on my bed in my room. And instantly, not like falling asleep and going into a dream, I was in this clear vision. And there was an old man who was dying. He looked like he was dead, with two women with long dark hair and white robes praying over his body. And he was in the most poor house with peeling wallpaper and very, very, like a shack, you know, like a country shack. And this man was, you know, unbeknownst to me, you know, a surprise, because how did this happen? In just seconds I collapse and I see this. And the old man got up, he looked at me, I thought you were dead. And he says, do you want to see an angel? And I said, oh, yes. And the second I said yes, just this thundering sound, it was like, you know, thousands of nuclear bombs going off, and these angels' voices were pulsing, the most beautiful sounds and music I've ever heard in my life. And this light just started shining down in the vision and dissolving the walls of this poor house, and the man is looking at me. And myself and the two women fell onto the ground. We were humbled by this light, this deafening, bomb-like sound, these fluttering, pulsing wind, you know, with the angels' voices strobing in between. And we fell on the ground, and we couldn't move. And I was fully conscious of my body on my bed in the bedroom. And as the light got brighter and brighter, I couldn't move my toes. Then I couldn't move my ankles. Then I couldn't move my knees. And then I couldn't even move my legs. I was actually getting paralyzed by the light. It was so loud. I mean, it would destroy the human ear bit by billions of times. It was that loud. You couldn't hear this sound in the body. And then suddenly I was paralyzed at my waist, and it was quite terrifying. There was no ecstasy. It was just blinding light, and I knew the source of the light above was God. It just seemed like the source of mm-hmm. God. And eventually my arms got paralyzed, and then I just said, you know, why? There's nothing to be afraid of here. This is obviously God, even though there's nothing but absolute terror and fear and this blinding sound of angels pulsing and singing the most beautiful music I've ever heard in my life. And then I couldn't move my neck, and that had to be the scariest moment of my life. It was real death to not be in control anymore, to completely surrender to God, even though there's no ecstasy, no love, nothing, just this loud sound and the angels, and the light was blindingly bright. And the moment I just relaxed, completely relaxed, and accepted that I wasn't in control anymore, this was way bigger than my little, you know, self, this huge explosion again of ecstasy, massive, like millions and millions of bombs of ecstasy started in my belly and just exploded into the cosmos. And I was lifted. I was carried above the city of Vancouver super fast and went into the rain clouds. And up above the earth, I was taken. And there was so much ecstasy. It was like, this is incredible. This is fantastic. You know, maybe I died. I don't even know. And they're showing me all these silvery gray oval cocoons, hundreds of thousands of them, hovering above the earth. And inside of each one of the silvery gray cocoons is the soul of a deceased person who is in the in-between state between reincarnations or had just died. And I could see as I came up to them, inside were these little lights flashing around, and on the silvery gray walls of their cocoon, they were seeing visions. Just like if you think of an apple or an orange right now, you project it on this imaginary screen of your mind. And none of them were in the light. And the closer I got to them with this angel that was off to my left, they were shaking violently, and they were afraid of the vibrations destroying their cocoon. And I thought, wow. And the angel said that they're not ready yet. It doesn't matter what you do. They're too afraid to die and lose control and go into the light. And I suddenly realized that the reports from near-death experiencers that the tunnel that people describe when they go into the light, the walls of the tunnel are silvery gray. And I realized that what people are seeing when they're going through the tunnel is their own, the walls of their own cocoon. And the light they see at the end of the tunnel is a little hole that appears at the end of each cocoon for them to either leave and go out of the cocoon into the light, those who are ready, and many are, and those who are not, they just see visions and life review and all kinds of visual display, which is all an illusion, ultimately. But it is the story of their life. And they're seeing it like movies projected on the walls of the cocoon. And once I realized that this was where all these souls were, you know, waiting for their, you know, their own experience to either move on or reincarnate, all of a sudden, I was rushing and accelerating at tremendous speed through the galaxy. And I went to this place where there was a membrane. You could see it like like a glass crystal membrane in the space. And when I approached it, the ecstasy and the love and the peace and the cosmic consciousness was so overbearing, so overwhelming, I couldn't bear it. It was, I just said, stop, stop, this is too much ecstasy. And I went through the membrane, and I went into the second clear white heaven, I was told, and the ecstasy there multiplies a million times over the first heaven, a million times. But the body that's in that heaven can actually withstand it. It's finely tuned to be able to receive it. And the love multiplies a million times, and the peace multiplies a million times. And I was rushing through that heaven at tremendous speed, moving towards the center of the galaxy, and the angel told me that there were millions of paradise planets within that heaven. And then I came to another membrane, and I pierced it, and I went into the third. And, excuse me, all of those qualities multiply another million times in the third. The human form, as I looked at my own body, I could see through my fingers, I could see through my toes, I could see through every atom of the body. The music of the angels was utterly spectacular as I went into higher heavens. I could experience that their voices were causing the birth of planets and stars, causing the birth of subatomic particles and atoms, and maintaining them. I could see that their voices were not just, you know, it wasn't just, you know, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. This dwarfed Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. It made it look insignificant. And then in the third heaven, the levels of ecstasy and love are so bright. The body there, as I approached the perimeter of the third and went into the fourth, I was told by the angel that that is the end of human form, that the brightest a form being can appear, can be, is the third. In fact, Emanuel Swedenborg, a great Swedish Christian mystic, went as far as the third heaven and swore that that was the highest of all of God's heavens. And I was going to find out that that wasn't true. I went into the fourth, and the fourth is the beginning of where you experience the graces. And there are numerous graces. They're very feminine in quality, and they dwarf ecstasy and love, utterly dwarf it as a perception, as a consciousness. They make all other consciousness obsolete in their qualities. You no longer even think of ecstasy anymore once you've experienced those. And I went through the fourth, and it's really unspeakable, you know, when you're in these levels of consciousness. I was able to tell myself I had no idea. I had no idea that enlightenment was this good. I mean, I thought bliss and what I experienced in the park that day, that was really pretty unbelievable. But this dwarfed that by billions and billions of times, being in the fourth. And I actually told God as I was approaching the fifth, and you can see it, it's a clear, you know, clear quartz. It's like a coming to the edge of a wine glass. You can see yourself going into a higher dimension. And when I went through the membrane into the fifth, I was saying, no, I can't take it anymore. Too much cosmic consciousness. I went into the fifth, and there's no form anymore. In the fifth, you literally become, there is no point that you can refer to as David, and then there's consciousness. There's no David anymore. There's just consciousness. I mean, there's no body. There's no point to look at. Whereas prior to that, you have consciousness, and then you have a reference point, which is the emanation, which is the body of, you know, your angelic body, if you will. But in the fifth, there's nothing. You're just disappearing into super fields of God consciousness. And the light was countless billions and trillions of times greater than what I could perceive in the first. And the angels' voices were still way up there. They were still coming from the source. And I knew I was going into the center of our galaxy. And I kept going, and I kept going, and I went through the sixth. And there's no way a human being can know what it's like there. There's just no way that to imagine what this means. And when I approached the seventh, it actually got easier for me. It was all up to God at this point how far I was going to go. A voice told me that if I crossed the seventh, I would never come back. That would be the end of David, you know, the little man disappearing into the big sky, would never come back to tell about what had happened. And I said, stop. I want to come back. I want to tell people what their potential is, how great the kingdom of heaven really is, how worth it, more than anything, this meditation path is. That if you do this practice every day and you really do these meditations, you can have this experience and it can be your reality. Really unimaginable what was going on. And as I got to the edge of the sixth, I saw the seventh membrane, it stopped. And I woke up in my bedroom and I hadn't retained even 1% of that bliss, not even 1%. It's like someone turned out the brightest light in the universe and suddenly I'm human again. And I told my brother Tim, you know, what had happened, and I was so excited. I said, this is all really real, and oh my God, this is the most incredible experience. You know, what am I going to do? The next day, December 23rd, at 4:15 in the afternoon, 1996, it happened again. But this time, I didn't have to go through any fear. I just went through all the heavens again. And I got to the seventh. It's like God wanted to give me another chance. Like, are you sure you don't want to cross the seventh? And it took me years after those experiences, you know, going to India and discovering Buddha's Lankavatara Sutra, where he describes that the Buddha's practice, the nirvana, what is known as nirvana, it's not the name of a rock band, is, Buddha says literally, over hundreds of lifetimes, he perfected levels 1 through 6, which are all known as samadhis. And they're all impermanent, meaning you may visit those states, but they're not permanent realization.
Mm-hmm.
For the Buddha, the permanent state begins at the seventh. That is nirvana. And Buddha says in this sutra, and for those bodhisattvas who take the vow to come back and return to teach others, they eventually attain the eighth and the ninth. And I had asked Rinpoche's, you know, assistants to the Dalai Lama about my experience. Nobody could tell me where I was. And years went by. And during those years, I practiced meditation every day, but nothing, it didn't matter what I attained, it couldn't touch that experience. Nothing could touch it. And it wasn't until, you know, again, normally someone would just give up. They would say, oh, you can't ever attain that. So, you know, why even meditate every day? You know, why continue your karma yoga of tree planting and working on environmental technologies? Because there's nothing that can compare to this experience of going through these. But the more I got to know Robert Thurman's work and reading the Tibetan Book of the Living and Dying, I realized where I was. And then I discovered the ancient Christian manuscripts, the Gnostic material. And when the Nag Hammadi Library, you know, went public in the early 90s, I went to an Elaine Pagels lecture at University of California, USC, and I read them. And there it was, inside of this collection of manuscripts discovered by a young man named Muhammad Ali in Egypt, were over 70 codices translated into English, the real missing teachings of Jesus. There is a manuscript called The Treatise on the Eighth and the Ninth. And I went, oh my God, I mean, it's so consistent that the Eighth and the Ninth are reserved for the most supremely, supremely enlightened beings. And the Seventh is the beginning of, in Buddhism, of Nirvana. But in Buddhism, the Eighth and the Ninth are reserved for the most, most extremely enlightened Buddhas. And I realized that I would be extremely happy to live in the third forever, for all eternity. The fact that there even is a fourth and a fifth and a sixth and a seventh is just bonuses upon bonuses of bliss and love and perfection and cosmic beauty. There's really even no need to go beyond Swedenborg's third heaven. But for the Buddhists, you are not enlightened until you cross the sixth into the seventh, because that is nirvana. And in Eknathaswaran's book on the Dhammapada, he mentions the seven levels, but nobody, and not even the Buddha, gave us a picture of what it's like to experience, you know, poetically, an experience of those levels. Not until Dante Alighieri, the great Italian Christian mystic and poet, did anyone ever describe it. And when Dante goes through all the nine levels of hell and the nine levels of purification, which is purgatory, and then he actually goes through all nine levels of heaven, his descriptions are astounding, utterly astounding, and probably the greatest Christian saint since, Jesus Christ, God's self incarnated on earth. When Dante, I can't even imagine the ninth, because for me, the seventh, I was told something happens there where your actual, not only your consciousness, but your physical atoms have the ability to merge to the entire size of these giant superfields in the universe. So you can literally physically be everywhere at once when you cross to that dimension. And when you read these Buddhist manuscripts and you learn about Buddhas and these great Buddha minds creating Buddha verses with their minds, when you're in those fields of consciousness, you don't doubt that this isn't child's play anymore. These beings really can create universes or galaxies with their minds, literally do that. We can't even imagine that because we just want to get blessed. We just want to get super high on meditation and be in peace and perfect serenity. We can't even imagine how big this enlightenment picture really gets. So when we read the Mahayana Buddhist scriptures about Buddhas creating, Buddha verses, we think, oh, this is the stuff of science fiction. I mean, this is where Buddhism got into these four major splits. The Theravada, Hinayana, Vajrayana, and Mahayana Buddhist schools, they're all disagreeing with each other because nobody can really imagine in the Mahayana view, which means the great view, that these things are really possible. But what I experienced in the sixth was absolutely it's possible to super create. And that bodhisattvas, like the Dalai Lama, is an emanation of Avalokiteshvara, one of the eight great bodhisattvas in Buddhism. Each one of those beings who, interestingly, bodhisattva means one who doesn't go into nirvana, which is extinction in universal, that level of the field, the seventh level, and no longer retains an emanation body. They attain nirvana, but for those who take the vow to always come back and teach others, they eventually attain the eighth and the ninth, and they keep an emanation body, which is for the purpose of teaching other beings. The Dalai Lama is one of thousands of emanations of that great bodhisattva. But that would mean he can go into at least the sixth, probably on a regular basis, at least. So it's really unimaginable what it's like to actually have this experience. So there it is. It happened, and years and years have gone by. I kept meditating, and that's when I could really see the techniques that weren't working. And people ask me, who have seen my film, The Voice, how can I get there? How can I have that experience? And all I can tell you is I really wanted this more than I wanted wealth. I wanted it more than anything. So I planted 1 million trees. I worked on my meditation every day. I worked on nuclear fusion, landmine bomb detection. I did everything I could for a living that was to serve, that was to help some other cause out there. And I never had a lot of money. And I always did my meditation practice, and this happened. This really, really happened. And the more I read the scriptures, the more I realized that this experience is universal, that countless thousands of Tathagatas, which means full Buddhas, have followed the path of the Buddha and attained this. Countless Christian mystics, like Teresa of Avila, describing the seven stories of the interior castle, the language was so consistent that you couldn't rest until you crossed the seventh, and you were on your own, until you could discover, what are the techniques that are available for a person to attain the seventh. Teresa of Avila, her path was very, very rigorous. So was St. Francis's path, very, very rigorous. And they attained it fully. I have not crossed the seventh, and I have now, after years and years of practicing, I have come up with these two meditations, deep relaxation an inner body awareness and the breath of God, exploring your vastness of being, as teachings that if you really do them, relaxation on a very, very, very deep level, as that meditation teaches, is far more important than learning concentration techniques. Far, far more beneficial. To be able to relax in your concentration, being very, very relaxed concentration, is far more successful than a very, very rigid concentration, which a lot of the meditation practices of the West today are very rigid in their concentration methods. So to have a disposition of a meditator being in a deep state of relaxation, using very little energy, just enough to hold the body still, and sitting in stillness for many, many hours doing these techniques, the more you practice this stuff, the more likely you're going to explode into this cosmic consciousness. And there is nothing. I mean, this is where, to me, it kind of gets funny when you think of, you know, people who have these very uneducated ideas about saints, and you think, you know, Satan can attempt Jesus and say, you know, I can offer you anything in the world if you bow down and follow me. You know, this is what Satan does to Jesus. And you think, oh, my God, do you have any idea what the attitude of this consciousness is that Christ is in? Do you have any idea that there's nothing in this world? There's not a thing you could offer a being like that. I mean, it's all trash to him. Mm-hmm. Or to Mary Magdalene or the Virgin Mary. It's utter trash to offer them anything in this world. Money, power, you know, giant mansions, who cares? You have the whole universe at your disposal. And when I had that experience, I said, all that matters is what I have access to. That's what makes you free. That's what, when you die, that's all you get. And what I was shown is all these other souls were still trapped in their silvery gray cocoons. They were way too afraid and not evolved enough to go into the super light. They could see a little bit of light coming through the end of the cocoon of their tube when they died, but it was still nothing. And so I said, I don't want that. I want to do what it is I do in my life to get this. And everything I do is going to be about, you know, perfecting my own yoga. I'm not a perfect human being. I make mistakes. You know, sometimes I bang my knee and I say things that are a little bit off once in a while. I'm working. I have not crossed the seventh veil yet. But I can now, with these techniques, easily go to the first, second, and sometimes to the third on my own.
Wonderful.
But I have never, since that day, crossed beyond the third on my very own. Happened again.
David, it's time for a break now. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to put out the cue to call if you would like to receive a free download of the Meditation for Deep Relaxation and Inner Body Awareness, as well as David's The Breath of God, Discover Your Vastness of Being. They're both available at namastepublishing.com. Then I need you to give me a call right now. You'll need an email address and internet access, 604-822-2487. First person to call through 604-822-2487 is going to get those downloads, and especially The Breath of God, Discover Your Vastness of Being. 604-822-2487. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we're speaking today with physicist, filmmaker, and yoga and meditation master, I guess we could call him, David Sarita. We'll be back in just a moment.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's non-profit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
Welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks for being with us today. And so we are speaking with David Sarita, and he is a physicist and a filmmaker, and he's recently teamed up with Namaste Publishing, and he has released his first set of meditation CDs available for download, Meditation for Deep Relaxation and Inner Body Awareness, and The Breath of God, Discover Your Vastness of Being. And you can find those at namastepublishing.com. Just go to the store and browse by authors and speakers. Look up David Sarita, and he's right there at namastepublishing.com. Welcome back to the show, David.
Thank you.
So we just have a few minutes left in the show, and I wanted to ask you something about the rapture, but is there anything that you want to add before I get into that?
Well, I just wanted to add the part about science and spirituality and why it's so interesting to me, because, you know, in the ancient world, those who went into these higher states of consciousness were able to advance not only spiritually, but culturally and scientifically. And that is because as you realize in the super fields of awareness that the universe has functions, it has abilities. It even has the ability to build a spaceship and travel, you know, from one planet or star system to another, and let alone one galaxy to another. It has that ability built into it. And it's not just sitting there blissing out and going, you know, wow, I'm so high. And it's that is wonderful. It's beyond belief just to be in those states. But there is perfect learning and perfect order in the universe. And once you've blissed out for a while and you've been in these states, the next thing is, okay, how can I learn how to solve this problem? How can we really have nuclear fusion and zero-point energy and flying saucers instead of, you know, fossil fuels and war and weapons, you know? So the people who go into deep meditation sometimes are poets, sometimes scientists, sometimes even a ballet dancer. But whatever your profession or preference is in life, that this experience of meditation will make you better at it. It will make you a deeper dancer, a deeper musician, a deeper scientist. And so those boundaries of limitation, where we think there are limitation and laws of physics, can be transformed with this new mind. And so meditation isn't just for people who, you know, want to, some people say, oh, I just want to escape. Ultimately meditation is to transform, to look at current states of ignorance and darkness and gain insight, super levels of insight. Have given us breakthroughs in technology that can change this whole situation down here. And that's where I'm going with this, is literally the learning process and dialoguing with the universe to build a super spaceship. And that sounds wild and fantastic, but that's where this world wants to go. You can see it in all the science fiction movies, and all of the Hollywood blockbusters that make the most money are all the movies like, you know, Avatar and Close Encounters of the Third Kind and Star Wars and all these movies, because we really want to go beyond the rock, and we're ready for it. But it takes a mind to have a revelation to make that happen. And that revelation in the mind happens in enlightened persons. So that's, you know, what I really want people to know about meditation is that is going to the real secret of success. You know, you think of the secret. You know, what is the secret? The secret is to fall so in love with something that you want to do in life and get good at it. And the real secret is to become better at it than all of your competition. If you think, you know, in a business sense, in a Western sense, that if you want to be more successful person, you have to be better than the person next to you who may not be concentrating or meditating as deeply as you are. So you're going to come out with a better idea. And the only way to get better at what you do is to deepen your mind, because it's through the mind and the soul and the heart that we receive insight.
Beautifully said. Well, we don't have much time left in the show, but you had mentioned the kingdom of heaven, and just the other day, a couple days ago, there was all this talk about the rapture and judgment day, and so I'm just wondering if you have anything that you'd like to say about that.
Well, that is a huge subject. You know, we could do a whole show just on that. But after my experience going through the seven heavens and not piercing the seventh, years later in 2004, which is 10 years later from that experience, I met Christ in person for the first time. And the blindingness of the tens of thousands of suns emanating from Christ dwarfs even my experience of going through the seven heavens. And utterly is so significant in to understand that a single point, an emanation body, can have complete actuality and realization with the entirety of the field of the cosmos. As far as the scope of my consciousness can see, Christ was the whole thing. That to rapture and to remove millions of followers or students or believers off the earth is an easy miracle for that being. I mean, utterly just nothing for him. I mean, Jesus told me in person that enlightened persons, people who attain higher and higher levels of enlightenment, when they die, they can create planets and stars and galaxies with their mind. And he said, because everything is created from and by love, nothing unholy can manifest here, because the darkness isn't the power of creation. The power of creation is through love, and therefore, he said, there's no need for control. They go out and they create what they want in the universe, and the universe has so much space, and because everything's created from and by love, nothing unholy can manifest here. There's no reason for control and dictatorship or any kind of a hierarchy in that sense of a hierarchy. So a rapture, you know, dematerializing, you know, hundreds of millions of people, no problem, absolutely nothing. So that's my perception of that experience of meeting Christ. So it's different if you believe that and you haven't seen, great. Because, I mean, I'm just saying from my experience, and I'm just one of, I know so many people have met Jesus Christ who have had visions of Christ. My experience is the power is unimaginable. You can create whole galaxies with ease. So moving some souls around, this is very easy. But as far as Harold Kemp and his prediction about when the rapture would happen, I knew when we were going to do the show on the 23rd, I thought, what if he's right and it happens? I thought, oh, great, you know, I'm ready for it. You know, I'm a believer. I believe in the rapture. Firmly believe in the rapture. Whether it happens in our lifetime or not, I don't know. But there are things happening in astronomy that, with a particular comet that NASA is following called LNIN, that interests me tremendously. But to do this right, we would have to really do another show.
All right. Well, I'll leave it at that then. So thank you so much, David, for being on the show today and your meditations again, meditation for deep relaxation and inner body awareness and the breath of God. Discover your vastness of being, both available at namastepublishing.com. And what's your personal website?
My personal website is lightstreamtechnologies.com, where people can get my vibrational energy pendants. And my movies are at voiceentertainment.net.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, and we'll have to talk about the rapture another day.
Yes, we will. Thank you.
Okay, have a great one, David. Thank you. So that was David Sarita. Thank you so much. This has been Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Coming up next is Parts Unknown, and I'm going to close the show with a song by the lovely Anna Taylor. I believe she'll be on next week or the week after that. She is a fabulous little pixie princess, angel therapy healer and singer, and she is going to be on the show to play with me coming up very soon. So I hope that you have a wonderful, magical